Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, the Fidelity Investments Canada podcast, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. So today is the big day when America chooses. Hopefully you had a chance to listen to our Countdown to the U.S. Election podcast posted earlier today, featuring Denise Chisholm and Jim Fibio, which was recorded last week. And we thank you for listening to this podcast as well, which was recorded on Tuesday, November 3rd, the day of the 2020 U.S. election. Jeff Moore, Fixed Income Portfolio Manager, and Greg Lohman, VP Digital Advocacy and Policy Communications, lead our U.S. Election Day coverage, speaking with host Pamela Ritchie, weighing in on what are the probable scenarios and what happens, according to the Constitution and other laws, in the event of an elongated battle, and in the in-between, between today and Inauguration Day in January 2021. Jeff and Greg also look at what investors can expect in the markets in the days and weeks ahead. So let's get to it. Enjoy. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
Jeff and Greg, welcome to you both. Great to see you.
Great to see you.
Good having us, Pamela.
I'm going to begin with Greg, if you don't mind. Greg, give us a little bit of the 1-2-3s of what we should be looking for at about 9 p.m. Eastern tonight.
Yeah, you said it with 1-2-3, and my colleagues and myself look forward to a day where we can stop speaking in hypotheticals, and hopefully that becomes clearer sooner rather than later. But really, we're looking at three scenarios, and that 9 p.m. hour is really important, Pamela, because at 9 p.m., we should have the results from Texas. And that's scenario one I'm looking at, which is, wow, if Texas goes Democratic, I think we could say Biden's going to have a big night, and you could potentially get to that clinching number of 270 electoral votes in the midnight hour or just shortly thereafter. The second scenario is really you're seeing him gain, and maybe he picks off one of those Sunbelt states, but the votes are still close. It's trending in his direction, but you're still not seeing Biden clinch that 270 number the night of. I don't think likely we're going to see that clinch, but you may have some indications that it's really going his way. And then the third scenario is that mostly the national polls have been off. The swing state polls have been generally accurate. It's closer than we expected, and Trump's having a better night than expected. Maybe he wins Florida early with, you know, the polls coming in there at around 10:36, 11. Ohio goes his way early. We know that. North Carolina goes his way. And then it really becomes a slog for those Midwest Great Lakes states that we've heard so much about, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And that can get really tight. And while we're counting those ballots in the days and weeks arguably ahead with litigation, it could get really messy.
So I'll ask Jeff, how, of course, do you position walking into this, first of all? And, you know, what's kind of in the market and what are you positioned for at this minute?
Well, the good news is that we knew this election was coming. Greg told us, and so we said, okay, let's put this as part of our scenario. And so we've actually reduced tracking error and opened up a ton of diversification and flexibility to sort of tack depending on what happens. But the number one thing for me, Pamela, is that we're probably not going to be trading tonight or tomorrow. This is the time for the Gregs of the world and the focus on politics. What we're waiting for in fixed income and Merrimack is more what happens 30 days from now and 120 days from now, what kind of policies are put in place? And in particular, our assumption is if it's a President Trump, we know that book. We have a book on President Trump. So that's not going to be a big deal for the markets 30 and 120 days. If it's a President Biden, that's where we have in sort of known unknown. If you want to use that thought process. And what we'll be waiting for in the next 30 and 120 days is, oh, how does this evolve? And how does all the policy agenda change? So that's where our heads are. Not necessarily a trade tonight. Enjoy the TV, watch the show. This is all about Greg. But the next 30 to 20 days, this is when we will start being able to use some of our flexibility.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, I'm going to come back to you on the discussion of stimulus, which is massive. And, you know, we can all talk about this for a while, I think. But so, I mean, part of what you would be looking for in the next 100 days, for instance, is indications of where might stimulus go? Healthcare is one. Certainly there's talk about green. If it's a President Biden, there's discussion about just good old fashioned infrastructure. I mean, how do you look at the stimulus? How much do you need and where will it go?
So for us in Merrimack and in fixed income, think of the stimulus being sort of two steps. There's the step of stimulus that just we're going to add sort of to the CARES Act idea and make sure people have extra money while we're still in the COVID-19 problems. But then there's the longer term sort of higher touch spending that is more entrenched beyond just 6 months from now, which I think is where the environmental spending, infrastructure, those are longer term things. Having said that, when we look at our scenarios, if it's a President Biden and it's a big blue sweep, a blue wave, in that scenario, we think things like infrastructure and municipal bonds are actually a pretty good place to go, because you can expect that there'll be more support forthcoming for those areas than before. That would be a scenario that I think is pretty realistic one way or another. We don't have a sense of size or so forth. So I think those kind of municipal bonds would jump to the fore. Whereas if it's a President Trump, they may take a little longer. Municipal bonds may not feel as good for some states and cities if it's because there's more of a tension there.
Interesting. Yeah. So that's sort of where the political side of the stimulus comes in. I mean, there are many sides of it. Greg, I mean, what do you think we need to know on the stimulus side of things? I mean, how big? Where will it go?
Well, a big question mark that could be sustained through January of 2021 is where the power in the Senate hangs. And why I say that is because Georgia actually has two races because of a special election due to the vacated seat of Senator Johnny Isaacson. And what they have in Georgia is what's referred to as a jungle primary. So in the election, if one candidate doesn't get a majority of the vote above 50%, it goes to a runoff. And both those races are trending in that direction because of multiple candidates in the race. So you could have a situation, and by the way, that runoff is in January 5th. You could have a situation where two Senate seats are still up for grabs, and the country's attention focuses on Georgia to try and win those two seats. The other one that's worth keeping in mind is Maine. In Maine, they have what's called ranked voting. You have to understand that all voting is local to the county level in the United States, and so it creates a lot of disparate situations across the country. But in Maine, it's ranked voting. So again, if the senator who is leading doesn't get 50% of the vote, they go back and see, well, what was your second choice and your third choice? And I don't want to get into all the details of that. But again, you really have three races where that uncertainty could hang in the balance. And I think that is what's critical about what a stimulus looks like, is how the Senate makeup, unfolds. Because under a Republican Senate, you're going to have a lot of tension, as Jeff mentioned, with respect to how big and bold a stimulus package looks. And then if Democrats are in control, and let's say they want to remove the filibuster, which reduces the Senate to a majority vote versus needing 60, you could really see a lot of big fiscal moves in 2021 that could help the markets. But I'll leave that expertise to Jeff. But that tension really rests on the Senate, most importantly.
Jeff, do you want to talk? I was going to ask you about, you know, the lack of there's so many correlations in the market right now. But I mean, is this a moment where you start to see things, you know, being valued very differently in the market? Is this going to be one of the catalysts for things sort of breaking off into different directions in your mind? I mean, treasuries, we've seen them sell off a bit today.
Mm-hmm. So I think that let's assume that it's a President Biden. That way we can do scenario work. If it's a President Biden, now the question is just how big is it, and how large an agenda will he be able to get done in his first 2 years? And that's kind of where Greg's coming with the Senate pieces. So if it's a President Biden, he's got a big agenda. The agenda so far on tape is 50% of GDP, half taxation, half spending. This is a big agenda. And the question, and this is where Greg is really going to be important, how does he prioritize this? Where are the votes? Because even within his own party, you know, he has to work on big issues and small issues. And so what we're going to do is focus on different sectors. Say, thematically, if it's a President Biden, but we don't know just exactly his scope, what will we think he'll do first, second, and third? That'll be our challenge. And we'll look at different sectors. So we talked about muni bonds. Let's talk about the environment a little bit. Even healthcare, the ACA, where is, you know, people in Canada, it's Obamacare. How will that, you know, be play out? And how will that be for hospitals? There's a lot of hospital debt out there that people like me can buy. So those are the kind of things that we're going to try to get a picture of. Not so much whether this will be good for the economy, because that's a really tricky thing. And you're going to have the combination of raising taxes on some, redistribution on others, and there's going to be this net. Are we better off? Is the economy going to grow faster, slower than would otherwise? The one thing we can take to the bank, though, is that for a lot of corporate management teams, as time goes on here, if it's a President Biden, and if it's President Biden and he decides he wants to have sort of a big scope, that'll be one where it's going to take a lot more management mental energy for every company to decide, okay, how are we positioned? How do we respond? And it may actually hold back some management teams saying, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves until we see exactly where all this is going, where the puck's going, as Gretzky would say.
You know, the multi-sector bond sort of take on the way you've created this to invest in this way, what does that give you in a situation where actually you're not clear? I mean, nobody's entirely clear yet where everything is going to fall.
Yeah. Well, you should know that for multi-sector bond, we love vol. We love vol and uncertainty because it allows me to use our five-step process and our amazing analysts to go find real value. And so if we get some vol, and I think we will because it's part of the marketplace. Like we've talked about this before, Pamela, that in general, the stock market pulls back 10% on a relatively fast annual basis. Now, it's not a forecast. It just says that's the history. I don't see why that would change in the next 12 months, regardless of who's the president, okay? So within that, if you have a pullback for some reason, and maybe it's a bigger pullback than others in some sectors, there's going to be opportunity for us, and we've really got a lot of room now, again, in multi-sector. Because remember, we went into COVID sort of February, March with a lot of flexibility. We used that flexibility in April, May, June, and we've now got it back again.
Interesting. Greg, so let's ask you to sort of point out some of the places where, you know, the volatility could be created because time is being chewed up by various issues. You and I mentioned sort of offline before, issues to do with the Supreme Court looking at different types of policy. Where could time sort of get chewed up and therefore there's uncertainty in the markets?
Yeah, I agree. And Jeff's point on sectors is so important, in particular healthcare, because no matter who wins, but let's go with that assumption that we have a Biden presidency. And even if there's uncertainty in Congress, probably a Democratic House for sure, if not a gaining of seats in that body. But you really have this important Supreme Court case that's going to be argued in the next couple of weeks. And then a decision will be ruled on next summer. And it's by all indications, you could have a ruling that deems the law unconstitutional. So legislation aside, power brokering aside, you have a law that's being thrown out or being at least challenged. You think of a Jenga game, a large block is coming out of it and the whole thing could collapse. So what
you're talking about the healthcare.
The healthcare law, Obamacare, yeah. Exactly. That ruling could basically throw that law out writ large. And so what that means is, you know, this assumption that, oh, if Biden's president, everything is going to be okay. He'll just write a new healthcare law. Well, not so fast. He's got pressure to create a universal mandate from one side of his party. The other side wants to retain the private option. That's going to open up a whole new debate that could arguably make the Obamacare initiative, you know, seem quaint because it'll be intra-party fighting. And that'll eat up a lot of legislative clock in those first 120 days, which are so critical to any administration to get the big, bold things done. And so, you know, you could see a situation where Biden's attention and his real principal deputies are focused on healthcare, while a lot of the management of other sectors, be it financial services, corporate governance, as we talked about, making sure there's stakeholder capitalism and equality through corporate governance, that could be managed by some of his other deputies, where there is going to be a lot more deference paid to them to just go for it. And that's where companies, I think, will have to sort of step back and make sure they're they're aware of, you know, some of the policy ideas and personnel, as we say, personnel will be policy here in this administration, where you could have a lot of shifts in how corporate America has to deal with government policy.
Okay, we're going to dive right back into that. I just want to get to some of these questions, Jeff. They're largely on inflation, yields, them being at zero. Some thoughts on sort of this broader picture. You know, let's just go to inflation first, because there is this discussion that a blue wave, should it come, is the reflation trade. Just your thoughts on that notion.
Okay, so we're not going to change monetary policy regardless of who the president is. Okay, so Chair Powell is locked and loaded with the plan. And more than that, around the world, the Bank of Japan, the ECB, Bank of England, Bank of Canada, we're all in the same sort of, you know, we want to have easy financial conditions. I would argue, though, that we haven't had an easing in financial conditions since probably late summer. We had the big step down post-COVID. So financial conditions got easier. So we cut rates. We added a plethora of credit programs to make sure markets opened up. So that became a very financial easy. We haven't had a second one. This is a stable policy. So I think there's this thought that we're just flooding the system with cash. And that's not true. And at the same time, the central banks are not monetizing the debt. That is not happening anywhere. In fact, interestingly, it was the Bank of England, the new government of Bank of England recently said in front of Parliament in England that they have no plans to do that. And certainly TIFF in Canada has no plans to do that. And neither does Chair Powell. So yeah, so I think there's this back of our envelope. We think there's modern monetary theory. The MMT is coming and we're just going to print it. Forget that. We still have a very stable and pretty orthodox central bank policy, which is to say, if you're looking for inflation, then you're trying to tell a story about prices on the move. Well, if you think about how inflation is calculated in the United States, sort of the CPI number, 40% of that is housing and related to that. Well, we know that rentals in New York City and San Francisco, because of COVID, rental prices are on the way down. So you have a headwind there. You've had the housing bump already. That's behind us. It's really hard to get really excited about the prospects for inflation. I'm not calling for deflation or anything like that, but I just want to make it clear to people that just because the presidency changes and just because there's one more stimulus product maybe coming, that's a one-time issue. This is a $20 trillion economy. And if you think we're going to do $1 or $2 trillion more in stimulus and that's that, That's really hard to make the price, the pull thing happen. And so, and the last piece I'll say is I think there's this sensibility that interest rates are just ready to fly higher. Well, hold on a second. In March, the Federal Reserve got control of the yield curve, and thank goodness for that. And in March, the Federal Reserve also got control of the spread curves, volatility, and almost the stock market. So why in good God's green earth would the Federal Reserve today decide to let interest rates be unhinged? They're not. It's easy. And just ask Tiff in Canada. He's got a version of yield curve controls.
So the question is, where do you go when yields are this low? I mean, that just is the question from investors. What they want, how do you answer that? You're looking across the sectors, really, right?
Right. You look across the sectors. We have a real global opportunity set. So you can actually tack and move some of your risk to countries where there's not an election and where there's not a big agenda happening, where the agenda is well known, right? So you can move money into Canada. You can move it into the euro, sterling, a little less in Japan just because there's not as much in terms of rate opportunity there. So one of the things we've done is we have a really big opportunity set and we're using it at this stage. At the same time, though, there are sectors that are pretty invariant to government policy. That where the government's not, like Greg said, the government's not going to get to them early. And the thing that we're watching for is, will some of the policy agenda, this large agenda that President Biden, if he wins, have, will it get gummed up with stuff like trying to get the ACA rebooted, right? This is what the market's going to be focusing on and looking sector by sector. I'll give you one sector I think you should look at regardless of who wins, and it's the banking sector. We're going to have a second stress test in December. We had a stress test in the summer. The banks all passed with flying colors. That's a great innovation post 08, stress tests of capital and so forth. Watch for that, because that could be an area where bank dividends and stock buybacks are again at risk.
Very interesting. And so the bond side of that is an area where you might be able to find some yield. Okay, so I want to ask, as we were kind of going around the world there a little bit, Greg, I'm very curious, what would foreign policy look like? What should allies and perhaps even non-allies, the United States, that maybe have all had different relationships in recent administrations or the one before? I mean, what does the field look like for foreign policy? Is there anything we should know?
Well, I don't think you can, you know, there's precedent there. I mean, Joe Biden was the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and a prominent one at that. And arguably, you could say through the Biden administration, the Obama administration served as the most key advisor or the last man in the room on all those policy decisions. So he has a real track record countries are going to be able to look to. That unpredictability of Trump is what really kept everyone on a knife's edge. I think there's going to be, if he is elected, that period of trying to, for lack of a better expression, repair some of that damage. I don't think it's going to come overnight. I think there's elements of what the executive branch can do without Congress that you'll see happen, whether it be rejoining the Paris Climate Accords, whether it be reshaping trade deals with the UK, re-entering the Asia Pacific region in a different way. I don't know, you know, where you could sort of reinsert yourself into that conversation around, you know, TPA and TTIP. But there are certainly low-hanging fruits available. I don't think he'll bite off USMCA and trying to, you know, get back into that. I think that's probably a settled agreement in North America. But there seems to be fertile ground in the EU. For sure. But I do believe that you'll have that kind of, as we say in the financial policy world, the rollback of the rollback. If Trump was rolling back relations in a positive way, you could say Biden will have to roll those back. So that continues to be a policy theme we're seeing, frankly, in the United States, which is this regulatory and executive branch pendulum, depending on the administration. That continues to keep businesses and countries on their toes.
I want to ask this to both of you because it almost surprises me too that we're coming, you know, in the last sort of 10 minutes of the interview, we haven't really talked about the virus, actually. Jeff, what does the bond market tell us about the virus right now at this point?
Yeah, well, I think the bond market is a long-term discounting mechanism, right? So I think that a lot of times people say, oh, the bond market doesn't seem to care, or the stock market's ignoring what's happening on Main Street. I don't think that's true. I think the bond market just takes an NPV of everything. And a good example, as Greg was saying, we may have a month or so where we don't know who controls the Senate. Well, the bond market's not going to fall apart based on that. The bond market's going to say, well, you know, we know it's going to be one of two parties. So that's pretty straightforward. We know there's a way to resolve this. And more important than anything else, the NPV of 1 or 2 months in the long history of the United States, really forgettable, right? And so I think for a lot of what's going on where people say, what's the bond market thinking? The bond market really is just saying we've had elections for 200 plus years in the U.S. and some of them have been full of rancor and some of them less so. Some of them have had people that, you know, we are really high and volatile. And the U.S. has got through those. And so I don't think this is going to be a lasting impact, the election itself and how long it takes. The impact will truly be what Greg said, how big an agenda can if it's a blue wave, how big is the agenda? And what are sort of some of the trade-offs that the marketplace will be following and which sectors? You think about fossil fuels. Fossil fuels are already under a lot of pressure because oil prices are so low. But you could imagine that if part of a big green agenda is something on fossil fuels, that's probably tough for companies in the sector. Hard to see how you get multiple expansion and how you get credit spreads to do better.
Greg, what is fascinating you right now about maybe something that we're not watching that's just sort of bubbling somewhere will come to the surface later on? What are you going to look to next?
You know, I think Well, I think when you think about some of the policy themes we're watching, you see these parties that really have lost their guardrails. And I like to say both of them sort of need to go on that trip abroad to find themselves. But it creates a lot of issues related to legislative risk. And what I'm watching most prominently in Congress, you know, outside of the election, is this question on the filibuster rule, which I mentioned previously. You've seen it go away for judges. That's why we can nominate Amy Coney Barrett with, you know, a party line vote. It used to require a 60 vote threshold for any act of, you know, judges at both the appeals court level and then the Supreme Court level. Just in the last 6 to 8 years, those governors, so to speak, were taken off by the majority party in the Senate, and it had begun under Democratic control, and then later Republican control on the Supreme Court nomination. You could see that same thing happen with legislation, and then really all bets are off because the Senate doesn't become, as they say, that saucer that cools the House tea, and you just constantly have this legislative risk out there. Where let's say we have a blue wave, wow, you've got a lot of tax, retirement, and investment policy that could change through a majority in the Senate. And what you're also watching for there is senators enjoy their power. They're in power for 6 years. You could build these little power centers in the Senate where, say, a Joe Manchin in West Virginia, who's very moderate, says, whoa, 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 I'm not going along with your new healthcare plan or your tax plan unless these certain priorities are met of mine, you know, in particular, whatever he may want in West Virginia for his constituents. But you can really see these power centers around some of these more moderate Democrats, the John Testers of the world in Montana. You know, if Bullock was to win in Montana, you know, against Steve Daines, there'd be a power center there. Some of these more moderate Dem states where you have, quote unquote, powerful senators.
I'm just going to jump in to get Jeff's thoughts on the all important direction of the US dollar. I mean, we've seen it come lower. We've seen actually some cyclicals rise on that. Where do we go with this dollar?
So the one thing that we're focusing on for the dollar is that the big agenda, the big change event is possible in the US. So Canada's not really doing much change right now, right? There's not a lot of change happening in Europe at this stage. There are elections coming, but nothing big sort of under the covers. The big potential change would be a President Biden, a blue wave, and they go after a massive agenda that includes regulation. So the way I would look at it is if there's this massive agenda, that'll be a headwind for the US dollar. The US dollar probably wants to get weaker because it's the thing changing and the rest of the world's not changing. And so it's hard to value the change thing. Whether it turns out to ultimately be the best thing since sliced bread or not. So it's hard to see how the US dollar here under a blue wave can accelerate. That would be a surprise to me.
I want to thank both of you. I wish you both some sleep in the weeks to come. Greg and Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today on Fidelity Connect.
Thank you for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. For more information on future live webcasts, please visit fidelity.ca. Don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter and subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice.